From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a far-left confirmation, unclean Russian sanctions, and parents continue to get involved. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Thursday, Ketanji Brown Jackson was confirmed as the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court in a very narrow vote. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins invited Senator Ted Cruz to join him on Tuesday of this week to talk about Jackson's history of leniency and, more recently, her inability to define what a woman is. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator, welcome back to the program.
Tony, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Senator Schumer declared this morning that Judge Jackson's likelihood of being confirmed is all but settled. Despite this, what issues should the American people be aware of that she is going to be taking to the court that could shape justice for this nation going forward?
Well, unfortunately, it does appear that she is on a path to confirmation, and it looks like all the Democrats are going to vote for her, and three Republicans are voting for her as well. And I think that is really unfortunate because I believe, based on her record, she is going to prove to be the most left-wing justice to ever serve on the Supreme Court. What that will mean is a practical matter. I think she will vote to overturn Heller versus District of Columbia, the landmark case that protects our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. I think she will vote to overturn Citizens United, the landmark case that protects our free speech, our right to engage in the political process. I think she will vote to overturn fundamental protections for our religious liberty, including Zelman versus Simmons-Harris, the landmark case that upholds school choice programs across the country. All three of those cases were 5-4, one vote away from reversal, and I think she will be a hard left vote. On life, I think she will vote to strike down every single restriction on abortion you can find across the country. That means prohibitions on partial birth abortion. That means requirements for parental notification or parental consent. I think she will be at the extreme left. And then, Tony, you mentioned the area where her record is most out of the mainstream, and that's on crime. She has been a judge for nearly a decade, and as a federal district judge, she consistently had a pattern of sentencing criminal defendants to much, much less than the sentencing guidelines provided, much, much less than the prosecutors asked for, and much less than her peers. If you look nationally at the records nationally, her average sentence for all crimes was 29.9 months. So that's the average sentence for all types of crime. The average sentence nationally for federal district judges for all crimes was 45.1 months. So in other words, she's 34% below the average of other judges. But where her record really gets extreme is with regard to sexual predators, in particular those offenders guilty of child pornography. For those who possess child pornography, the average sentence nationally is 68 months. Her average sentence was 29.2 months, 57% below the national average. And for those who distribute child pornography, the average sentence was 135 months, so 11 years. Her average sentence was 71.9 months, 47% below the average. And what I think that means is, as a justice, she is going to be a vote that will consistently side with criminal defendants. I think she will vote to strike down the death penalty nationally, and I think she will consistently vote to release criminals from jail, to create loopholes, to create technicalities. She will side with violent predators and with sex offenders over and over and over again, because that's her record of what she's done as a judge on the federal district court.
Senator Cruz, you're a student of the Supreme Court. You've been there. You've watched it. You've worked there. We know she's replacing a liberal. She's going to be to the left. But what influence, what shaping power will she have inside the court?
Well, I think she may have very significant shaping power. She'll be replacing Justice Stephen Breyer. I think she will be way, way, way to the left of Breyer. Breyer will occasionally vote on the conservative side of the aisle. Before I was in the Senate, my career was litigating before the U.S. Supreme Court. One of the landmark cases that I litigated and won before the Supreme Court was a defense of the Texas Ten Commandments monument, a monument that stands on the state capitol ground that commemorates the Ten Commandments. We went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and we won 5-4, just one vote away. And the deciding vote was Steve Breyer. Steve Breyer voted with the state of Texas to uphold that monument. If we'd have lost Justice Breyer, if Judge Jackson had been there instead of Justice Breyer, I believe Texas would have lost and the court would have ordered us to bulldoze a monument that stood on the state capitol grounds since 1961. As you know, the last book I wrote is called One Vote Away, How a Single Supreme Court Seat Can Change History. And every chapter talks about these landmark 5-4 decisions that are hanging in the balance. And I think Judge Jackson will be a consistent voice pushing her colleagues to the far, far left.
Senator, we're out of time, but I do want to tell you this. I thank you, and I know our listeners and viewers do as well, for fighting. Even though the confirmation looked almost certain from the start because of the balance of the Senate being split, but you fought, and we're grateful for that. That's what we want to see in our leaders, fight for the things they campaign on and things that are important to this country, and you've done that. Senator, thanks for being with us.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app. This tool serves to bring Christians across America together, advancing faith, family, and freedom. With the Stand Firm app, you will have all of our content available at your fingertips and will conveniently be able to stay up to date throughout your busy day. The Stand Firm app will give you access to a variety of resources, such as our most recent radio programs, social media posts, and publications. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that most concern you. Visit the App Store on your smartphone or mobile device and search Stand Firm to download FRC's Stand Firm app, or by going to frc.org/app.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Unrelated amendments to legislation have long been a way that the left in particular has used to shoehorn harmful pet projects into law. One of those pieces of legislation liberals tried to hijack was a package designed to sanction Russia. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about one of those amendments is Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator Paul, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Well, I want to commend you for standing in the way of passing a bad piece of legislation that was very popular, and certainly we all support the underlying effort of this measure to restrict trade with Russia. But tell our listeners the concern you had about the Magnitsky language modification that was in this bill.
You know, we're kind of sticklers for reading the bill. In fact, I have several pieces of legislation to actually slow down bills so we can read them. This bill wasn't particularly long, but people become afraid of sort of the crowd. The crowd was moving in one direction. Most people are for doing something, you know, to show our objection to Putin's aggression. And I'm there. I'm for most of the legislation under consideration. But they decided to move as part of this something called the Magnitsky Act, but they decided to take the definitions out of it that used to be in it and sort of leave a blank slate for, well, serious human rights abuses. And at first blush, you'd read that and you'd say, well, yeah, we're all against serious human rights abuses. We should punish people who do that. But if you don't define it, and then you listen to the left when they talk about what are human rights, it can get a person pretty worried about this. So, for example, the United Nations says that you have a human right to the internet. Most people on the left think you have a human right to housing, healthcare, and many of them think you have a human right to free abortion. Well, obviously, we steadfastly oppose that, but our concern would be that if you don't define what a serious human right abuse is, it could be that a country doesn't have free abortion, and a very liberal president of the United States says, well, we're going to sanction them for not providing a human right to their people. So the definition of what rights are is really important. Many of us have been having this debate for many, many years between, does the government protect positive rights versus negative rights? Do you have a right to something physical or tangible, or do you have a right to freedoms, which are intangible? And so this is a long-running debate, but it was going to pass, and it was going to pass overwhelmingly because of the emotions of the day and nobody willing to stand up. But I've let my colleagues on both sides of the aisle know that I'll stand up, even if it's unpopular, and say, wait a minute, what about this? What about this unintended implication of what you're about to do? So when I stood up about a week ago to oppose the bill, they did heap insults on me. They said I was outdated, antiquated. They said I was being obscure. They said I was a minority of one. They said nobody was on my side and I should just be quiet and sit down. But interestingly, after I stood up, I heard more and more from a lot of people. A lot of people in the pro-life community were already standing up. We had not yet had time to hear their voices. But in the end, by standing up, they all threatened me. They all threatened to say things publicly about me. But in the end, they're going to go back to the original language, which does define human rights abuses as things that we can all agree. Extrajudicial killing, kidnapping, genocide, all the terrible things that almost every human on the planet would agree is a human rights abuse. That's fine sanctioning that, but we have to make sure what the definitions are important. As you saw with the Supreme Court justice not being able to define a woman, definitions are incredibly important.
Yeah, and we find how words are given new definitions and new meanings by those on the left. And to your point, this was not a theoretical debate, because just last month, the World Health Organization, I've talked about this on the program here, put out a 210-page report calling on countries to remove all gestational limits on abortion, because abortion is a human right. To your point, exactly, some pro-abortion administration could pick up that language from the United Nations and say, you're violating human rights, and they could use these sanctions against them under the way the bill had been previously written.
And here's an interesting thing. As we went throughout the negotiations, we thought we had even more language that would have been inserted that would have been more protective of the Bill of Rights, basically a restatement that things that are protected under the Bill of Rights would also be protected from sanctioning. And they refused to have any sort of reference to any Bill of Rights protections for people that would be sanctioned. And it's amazing to me that we had a debate and they didn't really understand the irony of the left saying, oh, no, we don't want any reference to any kind of God-given rights or inalienable rights. Once again, even the justice in written questions, the potential justice, Brown Jackson, she responded that she's unsure whether there is such a thing as individual rights or natural rights.
So, Senator, a fix is in the works and we should see this move forward soon?
Yeah, in all likelihood, it'll go unanimously. And this is the one time when an individual has power. So when this came through committee, I tried to make some of these changes and I didn't have the power to do it because I couldn't get enough, frankly, Republicans to even vote with me or to care. But on the floor, they don't have enough time. So sometimes people in the media, they misrepresent this and say, I can hold things forever. No, all I can do is hold it until they decide to roll over me. But it takes a week because of the Senate procedures. It takes a week to roll over one senator who objects. So by objecting and then having a solution, we're able to still get it. It'll pass unanimously, but it takes the one individual who will object, and then they compromise, and then I let it go unanimously, and they still are able to avoid a week's worth of time getting through the legislation. So it does allow for a senator not to hold things indefinitely, but to shape the course of things that normally I wouldn't have enough power to shape. And they were very bitter. I can promise you they were bitter, even though these changes seem like, oh, all we're doing is continuing the same law. We haven't really done that much. They were bitter about having to give in to me because I was able to do this, but I was able to do this, frankly, because I was willing to take the grief that they try to give you through the public square.
Well, Senator Rand Paul, I can tell you there's a lot of folks that appreciate you being willing to stand up and take that grief. Before we run out of time, your friend Anthony Fauci saying that we may have to call the mask back. When are we going to get beyond all these government mandates?
Well, he's once again not looking at the science. We've had the lowest death rate, the lowest hospitalization rate, and the lowest incidence of new infection since the entire pandemic. All of the news is good. Now, if he wants to, in a month, discuss if we are up to a million cases again, he can at least have a valid discussion. But to ask for more mandates and say prepare to be locked down again when we're at the lowest ebb this pandemic has had. The other thing scientifically that goes against anything that Fauci is saying about more lockdowns is that if you test any 1,000 people anywhere in the United States, a random sampling of 1,000 people, you'll find that 95% of them have antibodies to either the virus or to the disease. About 60% of children have had this. About 50% of adults have had it, plus many of them have been vaccinated. So 95% of us have immunity, and that's why the virus is less deadly now. It's mutated to be less deadly, but we also have a significant amount of immunity spread throughout our country. And so we should be talking about getting back to normal and getting our freedoms back and not listening to a word Anthony Fauci has to say.
Well, Senator, if you would, keep sharing the science with him. Maybe he'll get it at some point.
Good luck.
All right, Senator Paul, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Senator Rand Paul when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Here at Family Research Council, we believe that every person is made in the image of God and has inherent dignity and worth. Drugs, abortion, pornography, and human trafficking all violate individuals' worth, which is why FRC firmly stands against these atrocities. FRC's Center for Human Dignity exists to give a voice to the voiceless by providing helpful resources that address abortion, drug legalization, human trafficking, pornography, and more. To learn more, visit frc.org/life.
As the ever-changing political and cultural landscape of our nation has shifted to cater to the left's ideologies on foundational topics, it is now more imperative than ever that Christians are equipped with biblical answers for difficult questions. FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, David Clausen, responds to this need with his Biblical Worldview series. Visit frc.org/worldview to read the full publications. That's frc.org/worldview.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Earlier in the week, we were talking about the parental rights in education bill in Florida that's been attacked by the left. And you know what? Governor DeSantis and the author of the bill, State Representative Joe Harding, have stood firm. And it's refreshing to actually see elected officials stand up in the face of this vicious left and now corporate America. And of course, Disney throwing in on this. So I'd like you to send them a note of encouragement. And one of the things we're doing is a petition, a pledge, if you will, of just saying thanks. Thanks for standing up for parents, for children, for our values. And you can do that. You can sign it. Go to frcaction.org/protectourkids. That's frcaction.org/protectourkids. Or just go to tonyperkins.com. We've got a link there as well. Add your name to those that are expressing appreciation to Governor DeSantis and Representative Harding. You know, a question that we have often posed on this program, I do it quite frequently, is what is our Christian responsibility when it comes to our children that God has given us, not the government, not the schools, but us? Well, our next guest recently wrote in an article in the Christian Post this, quote, "As Christians, we should never ignore our responsibility to protect and maintain our children's values. We accomplish this by demonstrating Christ-like qualities in our own lives and influencing a collective governing body, such as a school board or a city council." She goes on to write, "Friends, this fight is a struggle for the soul of our nation and is a fight we cannot afford to lose," end quote. The author of those wise words joins me now, Hedia Miramati. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, be sure and tell our good friend, Pastor Jack, we said hello. He told me what you're doing out there in Southern California. and excited about you advocating on behalf of parents and their children. You raised some very poignant in points in your piece that was in the Christian Post. One of them is the struggle that parents are having as they've engaged with the educational establishment that is slow to let go of the children. Tell us about it.
Oh, absolutely. So I recently moved to this area, to Orange County, but my husband began this struggle a couple of years ago before we were married, where they just started to realize it. And I think it happened mostly during COVID, during the lockdown, that they had no idea the kind of craziness that their kids were being taught. And not only was it the over-sexualized health education and some of the values, some of the liberal values, the socialism, Marxism, the comment that we are systematically a racist nation. And so a bunch of parents just started to fight back and attend school board meetings, where before, for 20 plus years, nobody was in attendance at these meetings. And one thing led to another. And through their involvement, they managed to get two conservative and one kind of moderate, but two conservative Christians appointed to the board. And we're seeing remarkable change. In fact, last night, critical race theory was banned in our district, and it was an 8-month-long fight, but we did it.
You know, Hedy, you have a very interesting story. You, for two decades, were a Muslim, a devout Muslim. You were a federal contractor working in the area of anti-terrorism and ferreting out extremists. You are now a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. How does that shape your view of our responsibility in this country as it pertains to our children?
Well, so my past, it was, people always ask me, how could you be a Muslim working for the federal government? And I said, it was actually my patriotic duty. I always had a sense of trying to protect America. And even while I was in Islam, I thought the greatest threat to the Muslim community was the extremists, was the terrorists to destroy the name of Islam. Fast forward now, I've had the redemptive power of Christ take over my life, which is an extraordinary experience in and of itself. But that sense of patriotism and now the values that Christianity has brought to my life and following Christ is something that our entire society desperately needs. Unfortunately, some people mistake, I see some of the comments on my article, some people mistake what I'm trying to say about our values as something we're trying to indoctrinate other people who don't believe it. But that's not it at all. We're saying we're standing for certain principles on which this country was founded, certain even liberties and religious freedom, but certain principles about the sacredness of family, about male and female relationships, about the sacred of the sanctity of marriage, that we cannot abandon just because it is unpopular at a certain period of time or because there are certain divisive agendas at work that want to destroy the nuclear family in the United States.
I mean, you have said you were patriotic. That's why you worked with our federal government, even as an adherent to the Muslim faith, now as a believer in Christ Jesus. Does that give a different sense or strength to those patriotic values, or is it still the same?
Oh, absolutely. The experience of encountering Christ and having the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, there's nothing in the world that compares to that. When the Lord first called me to make my ministry public and to make my profession of faith public, I was terrified. And through prayer and meditation and reading the gospel and reading the Bible, the Lord was like, daughter, you are battle-tested, combat-ready. And I couldn't understand what that meant, literally. But over time, I've realized that my physical attributes had now encountered the spiritual power of the Lord that gave me discipline, peace, joy, this internal transformation that I did not have as a Muslim. So there are certain ideals I may have in my mind or growing up in the United States. I was born in this country, but it's completely different when it is matched with the spiritual transformation that comes from a relationship with Christ.
So do you see, though, as looking back on that patriotic passion that your parents gave you by coming here from Iran to this country,
yes,
that those those things, those elements of America are truly rooted in Christianity. And once you experience that, it gives life to those values that America is built upon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is a shared principle for people that are patriotic, but it's really, I have to owe it to my pastor, Pastor Jack Hibbs, that really taught, because I'm a product of the American school system too. The history, the Christian foundation in American history, we don't really learn. And it's really owed to him that he has pointed that out so clearly and so demonstratively for me to be able to now know, oh, wow, this is not just as an American, I believe these things. This is as a Christian. And I'm grateful for that experience of being able to intellectually understand those Christian roots and not just being attached to it spiritually, which is extremely important, but intellectually, historically, being able to understand our Christian roots.
Yeah. I think that's extremely important. Hedy, one final question for you. You know, as I quoted earlier from your piece in the Christian Post, you said that this is a fight, a struggle for the soul of our nation. It's a fight we cannot afford to lose. Do you see this, you know, obviously we're wrestling in the political realm, but at its heart, is this not a spiritual battle for the heart of this country?
Absolutely. And in a small example, my husband was at the board meeting last night where they were taking a vote, and one of the audience members asked him to stand up and pray. And there were these demonic sounds almost from people screaming, "You're not allowed to pray here." And it was just, we see that spirit infecting a lot of the things that we do. But yet once the prayer began, those sounds were silenced. And that is because we war against, not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers in the air. And we have to remember that. But when the power of Christ appears, those powers must disappear. They cannot hold weight to what we have internally.
The key is we must stand up and speak up and declare that truth, or it won't happen. Hedy, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.